You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yes, yes. Welcome into another edition of the Tim McKernan Show on the Inside STL Podcast Network from the HomeLoanExpert.com studios. Our guest this week, presented by Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies, St. Louis born, Belleville raised, Wake Forest golf superstar, and then he wound up with 15 top 10 finishes at the majors on the PGA Tour. Ladies and gentlemen, Jay Haas, our guest on the Tim McKernan Show, talking Tiger at Augusta, talking his perspective on the Tiger change over the last decade, both physically but also behaviorally, on tour with his fellow players. His experience not only on the tour himself but with his son, Bill Haas, on the PGA Tour, and what it's like as a parent watching your son play on the PGA Tour. And also the state of the game of golf. All of those questions discussed in a really, really good conversation with an incredibly kind and friendly man, a St. Louis native who continues to do very well on the Champions Tour and did incredibly well. Dating back to 74, he was playing in majors, and he played in majors on the PGA Tour all the way through 2008. His name is Jay Haas, and he is our guest this week on the Tim McKernan Show. Well, Jay, the golf world turned its attention to Augusta this past weekend, and I think people who weren't even golf fans were locked in on what's taking place in Georgia throughout Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon with Tiger Woods and the comeback. What were you doing watching the Masters?
Well, I didn't watch, Thursday through Sunday every shot or anything, but I saw a good bit, and then I saw quite a bit on Sunday. And pretty incredible, pretty incredible leaderboard. It looked like Francesco was going to do it again. He had seemingly control and was playing very well. And I think his first time in quite a long time when he was in contention that he didn't have his best stuff on Sunday, but. Tiger was just there the whole time, never panicked. He looked like he just had a good sense about him, as he was going through. He never seemed to, show his emotion or anything when he hit a poor shot, made the putts he needed to make. And it was very, very special to watch and pretty great for the golfing world.
You made reference to Francesco maybe not having his best stuff for the first time in contention. You know, if you would have asked me who I thought was going to win on Saturday night, I would have told you Francesco, just because he seems to be, I don't know what a term you would use for it, because you've been out there, you've experienced it, you've seen it firsthand, but mechanical, robotic, like somehow above some of the stuff that gets called the Tiger effect. He already had dealt with it at the Open at Carnoustie, 8 months earlier. And I noticed he was smiling a little bit coming off of number 9. Brooks Koepka even fist pumped a little bit when he sunk a putt, which was uncharacteristic for him. And yet Tiger, when he walked off a 9 after that ridiculous 2-putt from the back of the green, he looked like the same guy from the early 2000s with that dead focus look on his face. And I thought, he's in the zone. Those other two guys, even though they're happy, were uncharacteristic in their normal behavior. And I wondered if we would see something different from them on the back nine. Two guys who historically are pretty unemotional out on the golf course. Is there anything to that kind of stuff when you get in that situation, the back nine at the Augusta, and you're up against a Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I think the players just really feel how special the Masters is and the tradition there and all the history. And if you think about the other major tournaments, they always move around. You know, we might go to Pebble Beach once every 10 years, Wingfoot once every 10 years, you know, the great courses of America. And certainly there's a rotation for the Open Championship, but you go to Augusta and everybody knows what 13's like, what 15's like, the pin on 16 mm-hmm. and, you know, year after year, and the players know that too. So I think they maybe have a different mindset, perhaps. I don't know, but you're right. I noticed the same thing. Francesco, I thought, gosh, if anybody's a machine, it's him. He seems, immune to the pressure almost. I don't know. It seemed like at the British Open, he hit shot after shot after shot. It was just beautiful. And, I expected more of the same on Sunday, that he was going to be pretty tough to beat. And then you looked at how, you know, Tiger bogeys 4 and 5, and Francesco made it unreal up and down at 6. And that looked like a possible two-shot swing there, and Tiger missed. He makes the par. It just looked like everything was going his way. But then he kept the same composure. You're exactly right. I think that he never flinched, and the other guys did. They blinked there, certainly on number 12. Something must have been fishy there.
What do you think about that? Because 4 of the final 6 went into the water. And I was wondering, now you've of course experienced that place, what you can see from the 11th fairway, though there, you know, it's an elevated fairway down to that green, and Poulter and Koepka both go in, and Tiger sees Molinari go in, and he's thinking to himself, as he said, I know Brooks is stronger than me. He hit a 9-iron, and he couldn't get it there. So I knew I hit an 8 and then do what Jack Nicklaus always would do, which is just hit it over that bunker, even though it's not at the pin, just kind of a bailout to be safe. Is that a spot on that course, Jay, where you can't feel the wind, but it's up there because you're kind of down low on a course that's so hilly?
You know, what I noticed watching on TV when I did watch it is very little wind most of the week. You know, occasionally, it gusted a little bit here and there. But basically, that is one of the most difficult shots to judge year after year. And you look, they say the flag could be blowing one way on 11 green. You look at 12, it's blowing the opposite. You just don't ever know what club to hit. But it didn't seem to be a huge issue. Saw very few balls in the water the first 3 days.
Yeah.
Certainly from the leaders, we didn't see anything. But there must have been something above the trees there that you couldn't tell on the green level. The Rays Creek was not rippling at all. And the fact was, I think that the guys who hit in the water, they were all left of the pin. You know, it was just a total miss club. You know, maybe Francesco mishit it a little bit, but they were. You know, other guys have gone, you know, Jordan there a couple years ago, he kind of pushed it and, you know, went at the pin too much and hit the bank, went in, whatever, when he hit 2 in there. But, I don't know. There was just some kind of, don't want to say divine intervention, but it certainly looked like those guys had never played the hole before almost, and Tiger had, you know. So after everybody hit it in the water, he just, he probably even played farther left than he would have in that position. So
anyway, why is that hole? Why is that hole so tough?
There's just very little depth to it. The green runs a little bit away from you left to right. So if you take enough club to go to the pin and you pull it, you're over the green. If you take enough pin club to go with the pin, say in the middle of the green, you push it, you're in the water. And so, it's hard to convince yourself over the bunker is the proper shot. You know, we're all geared to shoot at the pin, and everybody on the downswing, I think, thinks, I'll just hang on a little bit and cut it back at that pin. And that's just, you just can't do that. You just have to play for the middle of green, unless you just absolutely have to make a birdie. And very rarely does anybody have to make a birdie at number 12. You know, there's 6 more holes after that. So unless you're 6 or 7 behind, there's no sense in shooting at that pin.
I wonder if Tiger would have had a different approach had Molinari gotten on and been within 10 feet, because at that point he was 2 strokes back. Molinari would have been on in regulation, and maybe he takes a different strategy. So perhaps it was a good thing that he didn't birdie 11 and he wound up having to hit second to Francesco and then could take the more conservative route that really, I think, did turn the tournament.
Yeah, you can go through all kinds of what-ifs and What if Tiger didn't have a shot on 11 there after he blocked
yeah.
the trees?
Yeah, back-to-back days he had that little lane.
Yeah, how does that happen? You know, that's jail over there. So it, you know, somebody said, I didn't see it on Saturday maybe. He pull-hooked it in the trees on 13 and it kicked out.
Yep.
And he ended up making a birdie. You know, most of the time you hit it in there, it's you don't even find it. So a lot of things have to happen for a player to win. Tiger certainly, to me, was not as dominant as he was, you know, 15 years ago, 18 years ago, whatever it was. But he, when he had to hit the shots, he's an amazing front runner. If you think about it, when he gets his nose out in front, he hardly ever misses a shot.
Yeah.
You know, and the unbelievable stat is that was the first time he'd ever come behind to win a major tournament.
I know.
That's pretty amazing. So many things have to go right for anybody to win, but you know, when it came down to it, he hit the shots he had to hit. And yeah, you can what if all kinds of stuff, but you know, at the end of the day, he's got the green coat again, and the other guys are they're the what ifs. You know, what if I hadn't hit it in the creek there and all that? So you just never know.
I was enamored by the I guess 5 minutes from the moment he sank the winning putt to the time he walked in to sign his scorecard and everything that transpired. His emotional release, seeing him with his son, with his daughter, with his mom, with his girlfriend, and then making his way through in the cheers. But the thing that I was anticipating, and I wondered if we would see it, and my favorite scene personally, and I'm curious your perspective as a player, is whether or not a bunch of guys would be waiting for him after he won. I thought they would be, because I know he does have a good relationship from living down in Jupiter with guys like Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas. And sure enough, you did see a bunch of current players, guys who had just competed actually, out there waiting for him. What did you think of that? Did you expect to see that?
You know, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit, you know, but at the same time, the layout there is so different than it used to be. It used to be the scoring tent was right behind the 18th green, and then you left from there. Now you score, you do your scorecard in the clubhouse area. But yeah, that was very cool. And to see all of those guys, I saw Bernhardt
yeah.
at the end, and, you know, some of the guys who just like to hang around and, you know, wear their green coat one more afternoon and things like that. But that was certainly respectful. And I'm sure in days when they are playing down there in South Florida, just practicing, there's a lot of trash being talked. And so I think that was just a sign of respect out of, from those younger guys. And at the same time, Brooks just finished and all that stuff. So it was, you know, it was cool to see Ricky there, though, and a lot of those guys, Bubba, hang around. That was pretty special. And I will say this, that I was very happy to see Tiger's reaction. It was like any one of us ever winning a major tournament. You know, it seems like in the past when he's won, it's just like, okay, I won that one. Where's the next one? You know, and this one was his reaction on 18 green, you know, kind of letting out the scream and just, you know, raising his fists. And it was a different a reaction or a different celebration in his mind, I think, and not a I told you so or anything like that. He was genuinely probably as happy as I've ever seen him, certainly winning and then having the kids there and everything. I think that just was you know, it was great to see that reaction in my eyes.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jay, because I've read a number of golf writers' perspectives on this just because it was the story. It still is the story. And one of the things they've pointed out, not only the different reaction from his previous major wins, minus that first Masters perhaps in 97, is the fact that there were guys waiting for him and that the way that he was thought of on tour because of the way that he conducted himself around other players on tour up until things changed here recently. Some people thought that there wouldn't have been a soul waiting for him near where they signed the scorecard on Sunday. But because he is now a kinder, gentler Tiger, so to speak, that there were guys who were happy to see him win. Do you see any of that being the case?
Oh, I think so. I think that most of the guys realized how important he is to the game. And I kind of chuckle when I would read the comments by some of the young guys, boy, we sure wish we could have played against Tiger in his heyday and all this stuff. Well, I got news for you. That's not his heyday either. His heyday, he would have mowed them down too. he obviously played great. He won the tournament and all that stuff, but he was better than he was. He never missed a fairway. He never missed, he'd have won that tournament by 10, back in 2000, 2001. So, just be careful what you wish for some of those younger guys. And he's still, is he 43?
43 years old, yep.
Plenty of tread left on those tires, So he's no telling. And people have asked me, did you think he would have come back and all that? And I had times where I thought no. I had times I thought yes. I've never been 100% committed, and nothing that he does surprises me. He's a tremendous athlete and has the ability, one of those great, great athletes that – seem to get better when the pressure's the greatest. A lot of us kind of shrink in those situations, and he just relishes those. He's seemingly another one of those guys that seems to be immune to the pressure, and almost he gets calmer or something. I don't know. It's pretty hard to describe, but he's there's never been a golfer like him, I don't think. I'm still in Jack's camp, I suppose, about the greatest ever and all that stuff, but it's pretty hard to deny what Tiger did in a stretch of, 8 or 10 years and how dominant he was. And if you measure it by the majors, then he's still got to catch Jack and all that stuff. But, why even argue that? Let's enjoy the fact that those were the two greatest players ever.
You bring up Jack, and you were out there the Masters that has been getting compared to what we saw this past week with Tiger in 1986, finished tied for sixth in 86 when Jack made his run on Sunday at the age of 46. What do you remember about that Sunday afternoon at Augusta? Hope you're enjoying our conversation with Jay Haas here on the Tim McKernan Show. We're doing it from the HomeLoanExpert.com studios. Ryan Kelly, the sponsor of the studios here on the show. And we are very grateful for his support. As interest rates continue to drop, it's your opportunity to take advantage, whether it be right now during home buying season or for refinancing. Now is the time to do it, as the pleasant surprise from a home buyer perspective that interest rates have dropped makes Ryan Kelly and the HomeLoanExpert.com the place to go, the person to know, and he's going to take the best care of you, save you the most money. He's Ryan Kelly. He is the HomeLoanExpert.com, and he is the sponsor of the studios here on the Tim McKernan Show.
I do remember I played with Jack on Saturday, and I want to say he shot 69, maybe I shot 71. We both played well, but it wasn't, we were pretty far out of it at the time, I suppose. But still, if we get a little run going and all that stuff. But I remember it being a very friendly round, and Jackie was caddying for him. And, Jackie's closer to my age almost than Jack is my age. And so, I don't know. We just had an enjoyable day that day. And then, I was just a couple groups ahead of Jack probably, and I heard the roars and knew that he was, making his charge and things like that. But until it happens, it's to say, you had Seve up there and you had Norman, and so it wasn't like those guys were going to go away either. And you almost didn't expect that a guy 46 was going to accomplish that. And I'm sure there were as many superlatives that year, that afternoon, that evening, in the news, as there was just past Sunday. So, is that the greatest Masters? People in 86 said, "Will never be another one like this." Well, guess what? We just had one, probably. And you can argue that which one was a greater accomplishment and everything. But it was pretty cool to see them both, actually.
I was down in Jupiter, Florida, living down there for a few months when the Cardinals were at spring training, and I'll do my show down there, and then I come back up to St. Louis. And while I was down there, Adam Long, St. Louisan, who won the Desert Classic, beat Phil Mickelson on the 72nd hole back in January, we did an interview. We did an extended interview. And, I said to him, at some point you had to think, you know, this wasn't going to work out for you. He was grinding mini tours for 7 or 8 years. And he goes, no, I was always just confident in my game. And I knew that I was progressing and I was going to get there. And I thought, wow, this is the kind of calm and confidence you need. And then I said, and what about, you know, being head to head with Mickelson? The crowd's either pulling for him or Adam Hadwin, the Canadian. There were a lot of Canadians there in Palm Springs that weekend. And you're kind of the villain. And he goes, yeah, there's just some guys during tournament play can excel. And then there are some guys who can just eat them up. And for some reason, I've always had the ability to block that stuff out and be fine. And I've found, you know, and here I am as a 10 handicap playing, whether it be in a member guest or some, you know, stupid little like D flight of a club championship. And I find myself getting tight. So I'm curious, having done what you've done in your career, and you're still out there firing low 60s here and there, what was it, something that you were just born with, or was it something that psychologically you had to train and then begin to navigate, the heart pounding, the hands getting tight, palms sweating? What's psychologically, because people talk about the ability to hit the ball and to putt and short right. game, but the psychology, I feel like, is so huge to the game.
Yeah, I think that I think some people are born a little bit more able to cope with situations like that, just calmer in everyday life situations. It doesn't seem to ruffle them. Other people get a little too flustered and all that. But I do believe, and I don't know if there's any kind of books you can read or any mental gymnastics you can go through, but I think that all of us that have had any kind of success just have a certain belief that we can do it, and you have to trust that belief. And you know what I've told Bill over time when he's, you know, been nervous and gets in the lead and all that stuff, I just tell him, you know, this is what you work for your whole career, so why be nervous about it? Be excited about it. Be, you know, look forward to it. Relish that situation. And I think a lot of people are just you know, comfortable to be kind of swimming with the pack, and there's just a few that really want to distance themselves and lead and feel comfortable in that role. And I can recall Tiger always saying that, you know, if I was two or three ahead, I wasn't nervous, because those were just a couple shots that I could kind of, you know, make a bogey. I could afford to make a bogey. I didn't have to, mm-hmm. you know, make birdies instead of falling farther back. So he enjoys the role of being the leader and all that. And I think that guys that win, they just, you know, have a certain belief in the, you know, what they say inside your gut or your heart or whatever you have that rises to the occasion. The guy in the eighth inning or ninth inning with two outs and he comes through with the hit. You know, there's some guys that do that more than others.
Yes.
You know, will they get better pitchers? I don't think. You know, I think they just know how to do it and they believe in themselves and they go up with a good attitude of, I'm going to get a hit, as opposed to, guy, I hope I get a hit. Mm. You know, so it's hard to put your finger on, but you know, there's a ton of people that are capable of that and that do that now. And you look at Justin Thomas and how he can finish off a tournament. Certainly Jordan, he's not having his best run right now, but he'll be back. And he's proven over time that he's great. Brooks has been amazing, you know, three majors and pretty incredible what he's done in the last few years. So there's a bunch of guys that do it. And just so happened that Tiger whooped them all this weekend.
Bill, excuse me, regarding your son, you made reference to Bill. How is he doing? I mean, that's the phone call you got from your son after the accident last year it's very cliche, is the proverbial parent's worst nightmare. And for those not familiar, your son, Bill, on the PGA Tour and experienced a devastating tragedy in a car accident last year. In researching for our conversation here today, Jay, you know, you talked about, you know, you got a text and then you got a phone call 90 seconds later and there's your son in a horrific car accident where the driver passed away. How is he doing? How is your family doing? If you could, I know it's a brutal topic, but it's certainly people in St. Louis, when they heard about that, they go, oh my God, there's Jay Haas' son.
You know, it was it was quite a jolt when I texted him. I don't know what time was, 8:36. You know, it was 9:30 because I think it was 6:30 out there in L.A. And I just said, "How's golf going this week?" And but a minute later, he called me and lays this on me that he's just been in an accident, terrible accident, head on. I'm okay, but I don't think the driver's good. I think he might be dead. You know, all this stuff in this conversation, and I'm just, you know, I went cold. And, you know, fast forward, you know, I think he's doing okay. I think it's on his mind constantly, you know, to be sitting a foot or a foot and a half from someone in a vehicle and they die and you walk away basically with just a couple banged knees. That's pretty, you know, there's divine intervention, I would say. We kind of just pinch ourselves or say our prayers and just so easily it could have been the other way around. Mm-hmm. And what ifs, you know, talk about what ifs if you'd birdied 11, you know, what if something would have been different if Bill wasn't here right now? It just, I can't even imagine that. But as far as he goes, I think he's dealing with it. He wasn't playing terrific, you know, when that happened. And I think it kind of affected him worse than he let on. I think he wasn't sleeping well for a long time and still, I think, has thoughts about it and everything.
Survivor's guilt in some capacity, you think?
Maybe, yeah. I think all kinds of stuff. And, you know, he saw some people and talked about it and, you know, very natural reaction. I guess post-traumatic stress syndrome, is that what you say? I think that's... Yeah. That happened to him, I believe. But now, you know, a year plus later, I think he said something to me the other day. He says, I think I'm doing better because I'm getting mad about my golf or something like that. And, so you know, golf's a hard game. And when you got something else on your mind, it's just not, not easy to do too much time to think about things before each shot and all that. But I do think he's kind of hit the bottom and he's starting to come back up. And I've told him, and he's seen it over time. Everyone goes through difficult times on the golf course and in life in general. So I think he's doing better on and off the golf course. And I look for him to get back to playing like he once was.
The parent side of watching your children is now something. I have a 1.5-year-old, so I haven't experienced it yet, but I hear from my peers who have kids who are older, and they're just like, I can't tell you how nervous I am watching, but they're like kicking a soccer ball around with like 20 other kids just following around in a swarm. You know, you're watching your son play on the PGA Tour, a place you had incredible success. Is it more nerve-wracking for you to watch Bill play than it was for you to be out there and do it yourself? James Carlton is the man that I have been working with the most over the last few weeks. Ever since we returned home and our basement was flooded, I have been on the phone calling, texting, emailing with James Carlton nonstop. And he is so responsive, and it means the world to me and my wife as we deal with something that I know a number of people have dealt with in St. Louis, and that's flooding, especially when it's in your own home and you've never been through this process before. That's what we're dealing with. To have James Carlton, it's beyond an advertiser here for the show. This is somebody who, if we didn't have him, we would be spinning around in circles. I cannot recommend James Carlton into the State Farm Insurance Agency enough to our audience. 314-961-4800 or go online at carltoninsurance.net. We are personally experiencing right now the benefits of working with someone the caliber of James Carlton, the thorough practices of his staff. And when you need somebody at any time, and that's going to, the flood doesn't come during business hours. The flood comes on Saturday nights for us. That's what happened. Saturday night, 10:30. Oh my God, our basement is flooding and James Carlton is on it. 314-961-4800 or go online at carltoninsurance.net. If your insurance costs a leg and an arm, call James Carlton, State Farm.
You know, I don't think so. I've always had real good confidence in Bill and that he was going to make this putt or that putt. And I also realize from firsthand experience how hard it is, how hard golf is, and to win a tournament and to compete in today's world. So, you know, if he missed an 8-footer, it's not, I don't feel like the world just came to an end because I've missed 1,000, you know, 10,000 of those. So I think I'm coming from a little bit different angle. Yeah. And I'd much rather have him putting it than me putting it, certainly right now anyway. it's a tremendous thrill for me, and I'm just a fan, you know, when I'm out there watching him play, and when he hits a good shot, it's terrific. When he hits a poor shot, I understand it. It's a hard game, and everyone hits them offline every now and then, and you just keep moving forward. But it's been a thrill of my wife Jan and I for a long time, watching all of our kids stuff. We had three daughters, and two of them played high school basketball. I was more nervous, I think, about that than watching Bill play professional golf. You know, it was just, and as you will find out as you go through, as your daughter gets older, it just there's nothing like it. The pride you feel when your kids do something well. It's a pretty special feeling.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, I'm always curious. I mean, your uncle, of course, Bob Golby, won the Masters. I'm curious when you really like or maybe your parents were the people who told you when you actually started hitting a golf ball. Because I feel like these days it's like you see the commercial. It was like American Express or Titleist or something like that with Justin Thomas and his dad and him are out there and he's what, like four years old, and Jordan Spieth and him were, you know, 6 years old. When did you start? You know, Skip Berkmeyer is a local guy here in St. Louis, a great amateur player. And he said, yeah, I started playing when I was two because my mom was a great player. And so I was just up there, and that's when I started doing it. It seems oftentimes these days, most of the people we see out there were doing it at a very young age. Do you fall into that category?
I do. I would say I probably first put a club in my hands when I was about five. Didn't really play any golf then, but I played, you know, around the yard with wiffle balls and all that. And then when I was seven, summer when I was six and the next summer when I was seven, I would say I started to play a little bit more. My dad would take me out. We'd play nine holes. There was, of course, Elmwood over on the Illinois side. Mm-hmm. Played there as a nine-hole course. And we'd just go there on the weekends. And but I did most of my practicing and playing in my backyard, you know, in the wiffle ball. And I always say that I played against Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and Gary Player. That was the foursome, and Jay Haas. And I beat them every single time in my backyard. So
you did get them. You got them.
Oh, absolutely. Every single time. You know, I had, I don't know how many majors by the time I was done in my backyard. But, you know, it was, I think I was a little bit strange, though, too. You know, there's so much more for kids to do today. And I would encourage all the kids, if they like golf, that's great, but play baseball, play soccer, play basketball, play tennis, whatever, because your body's going to change so much from the time you're 6 years old to the time you're 16 and then onwards at 20, 25. So it's great to get a good foundation in the game, but it takes a special person, I think, to just be a golfer. You know, I mean, there, as a kid, there's so much more going on, and enjoy that part of it. But, you know, I had the ability or the fortunate happenstance to have Uncle Bob there to teach me and all that, and then my dad to take me out to play. And it was, you know, I was kind of blessed in that regard. But I also had the passion for it. You know, yeah. I loved to play and loved to go out there and didn't mind playing by myself. You know, and that's the good part about golf. You don't need, you know, nine other guys to play basketball, or you can go hit balls by yourself and play around the golf and you know, challenge yourself to different shots.
When did it become clear, whether it be to you or if you've had a conversation with Uncle Bob or your parents, that you were trending in a direction that you were rising to the top and the rest of the pack was behind you? Was that happening before you got to high school? Did it start to happen in high school?
Probably right in that time, you know, 12, 13, 14, somewhere in there, where I started to play pretty good and shoot some good rounds. And then Bob would come home and we'd play, and he'd say, you know, I've seen him come and go, and you got what it takes. He was always my biggest cheerleader and always kept pumping me up, and you can do this. I've seen guys, you know, you just need time. You just need to get strength and experience and all that, but you can compete out there and play with these guys. So, you know, and then when I was maybe 16, 17, as I got into high school, I started to get a little bit longer and shoot some lower scores and win a few tournaments around there. The tournament golf was so different than it is now. I mean, you've got the AJGA and all these junior events everywhere around the country. It's nothing to hop on a plane and go across the country and play in a junior tournament nowadays. Back then I played in the USAM, the US Junior, if I qualified, and man, could I scrape enough money to get together, you know, to get to that tournament. And Now it's not even a thought. You know, you go play in the Bahamas or wherever these kids might play. But that's a great, I think, another reason that the kids, these 20-somethings, are so good. They've been playing tournament golf, and they're not afraid to play with a scorecard in their pocket, as we say.
Yeah.
They love that competition, and if they're still doing it now and haven't gotten burned out, then they're going to be good for a long time.
What was the difference between you and the rest at that time? Were you able to hit the ball much further, or was it the short game? What do you think was separating you from the pack? Putting?
A little, not long. That's by any means. That's not long. I was never in that category, but I think I was a pretty consistent player. I put the ball in the fairway, and I hit a good many greens. I was a good chipper and putter. Didn't really have any kind of highlight, but probably my putting at a young age helped separate me and just being able to score. And, you know, and then at the time, I guess I thought that I could do it, you know, and I'd get into the hunt and hit a good shot when I needed to. And what we were just talking about there,
yeah.
how do you hit those shots when you're nervous? And I was just able to pull them off and got more confident. And, you know, hard to say, but, you know, you pit yourself in a golf tournament, you pit yourself against other players, and that pretty much tells you where you stand. If you played great and you finished 50th, then you probably, you know, need to look to something else. But if you didn't play well and kind of still hung in there and had a chance, then you probably had a future.
Well, I've been talking to you guys about one of our sponsors for a good while now, and his name's Mark Hanna with Evergreen Wealth Strategies. And I like talking about Mark Hanna because I know he can really help you if you are in need of a financial advisor. And I'm telling you this, if you don't have one, then you are in need of one. And here is the one that you should be with, Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies. He presents our guests every week here on the Tim McKernert Show. You can find him at evergreenstl.com. That's evergreenstl.com. Or give him a call at 314-889-0503. That's 314-889-0503. Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies. Now, the thing you might be wondering is, well, I don't know, I'm 25 years old, and I'm not going to need to think about retirement for another 30 years. I understand. I kind of thought the same thing, except I thought it was never going to be in play. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, I haven't really been managing my money properly. And then you realize you've left a lot of dollars on the table. And now that I've been doing it properly for like the last couple of years, which is embarrassing that it took that long, I see the difference. And how much it can mean to your life, for your peace of mind, and to get with someone the caliber of Mark. Can't say enough about him. 314-889-0503. That's 314-889-0503. Or go online to evergreenstl.com. Now back to the guest Mark Hanna's presenting this week, Jay Haas. You were part of what is considered to be the greatest college golf team ever, 1975 Wake Forest. I would imagine that was an incubator of talent as well, with a group of guys, some names certainly familiar to our listeners, such as Curtis Strange, the two-time U.S. Open champion, amongst many others. And you guys, what was the number? You won the NCAA title by 33 strokes. When I heard that from my producer the first time, I said, did you say 33 strokes? I mean, that makes Tiger in 97 looked like nothing. I mean, 33
right,
strokes.
Right. Yeah, that was, you know, it's a different format back then. The format now certainly is different quite a bit. Is the top eight going to match play? And that's a very cool format. And I think it's terrific that it's on TV now and all that. Back then, we had a pretty solid team. I think the year we won by 33, I finished first. Curtis Strange finished third. And Bob Byman finished fourth. Individually, so we had three really strong players there, and then a few other guys. David Thor from Reedsville, North Carolina, he ended up playing a few years on the PGA Tour. You know, we had a deep team, and also it used to they counted the best four for the week, not just every day. So if a guy shot an 80 and then shot 70, certainly counted the next day when he shot 70 and not the 80.
Mm.
But back then he was 150, and that's what you had to count. So we got him pretty much with our depth, and we didn't lose too many tournaments. It was a cool time. And Curtis still says, I've heard him tell people in speeches and in crowds that college golf was some of the best years of his life, and would not trade that for anything.
All of the years on the PGA Tour, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, and it's just, you know, I mean, not only an incredible amount of success, but durability, I think, would be a word I would think of when I'm looking at the numbers. I mean, you're playing in majors starting back in 1974 and all the way through 2008. I mean, there aren't a lot of people who can spread out that range, and a lot of top 10 finishes in there. If there is a moment that somebody said to you, Jay, this is the moment you could go back and relive from your time on the tour, what would that moment be?
Boy, that's a tough question. I don't know. It seems like I remember a lot of the really good shots, but I also remember a lot of the really bad ones. And so I'd certainly like a few of those back, I guess. You know, the year in 95, I finished third at Augusta, and Ben Crenshaw mm-hmm. won. I was leading after 2 days, and I think I shot 41 the front nine, maybe 42 the front nine, and with the lead. And I'd like to go back then, knowing what I know now, maybe, and be a little more aware, be a little more calm, to be a little more believing in myself. I think as I got older and went to the Champions Tour, I played a little bit more aggressively in my mind, not necessarily shooting at pins from 280 yards away over water or anything like that, but just believe that I was going to hit a good shot rather than trying not to hit a bad one. And I was probably at that time, I thought, geez, don't make any mistakes rather than let's go shoot a good round.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'd like to have that one back. That's probably my best chance to win a major. And certainly Augusta with Uncle Bob being up there in the Champions locker, that was my dream goal to win that tournament and keep going back year after year. 'Cause I saw how important it was to him. And like I said, how great it was that every year it's the same place, and just to be in that club of champions, there's nothing quite like it. But that's, if I can just at the top of my head, like I said, there's hundreds of different things I wish I'd have done differently. But that was a time that I felt like maybe I gave away too much there.
And I'm it's an honor to talk with anybody who's been able to do what you've done in the game of golf. I saw Justin Thomas on Twitter the other day at like 30 minutes. He was just kind of doing a Q&A with people on Twitter, and somebody asked him the question, I'm starting the game, or my son or daughter is just picked up the game. What would your advice be to somebody just picking up the game? And he said, spend a lot of time around the greens, chipping, pitching, and putting. A lot of people go to the range and they'll just start bombing it with the driver and they don't really have a plan. But if you really want to see improvement, that's the place to do it. Is that what you would tell people as well?
I think that's very, very important. I believe that scoring, learning how to score, learning how to play golf, and I would liken it maybe to a baseball analogy where there's I bet there's quite a few guys that aren't in the major leagues that can throw it 94, 95 right. miles an hour, but they don't know how to pitch.
Yep.
And, you know, how to set up a hitter and things like that. And I think golf's kind of the same way. You have to learn how to score. And so, short game is half the game. You know, you think about it. I mean, you hit only maybe 14 drives around, and here you've got, you know, you're putting, you know, 25 to 35 times around, or you hope not that many, but you know what I'm saying? There's a
sure.
lot of, you're doing it on every hole, and a good chip can help save your round. You know, you chip a tough shot, you chip it 3 feet, and you make it, and now you're almost as excited as about making a birdie. So, you know, practicing your short game is of the utmost, I think, and you've got to put the hours in there. And as a kid, that's easy to do. You can play little games with yourself, and I've got to make, you know, five of these putts from 10 feet to, you know, in the next minute or whatever it is. You just play little games with yourself, but then also go play and try to shoot your best score that you ever shot each day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your best is 80, you got to shoot 79. You got to break 80. If it's 75, you got to shoot under that. You know, just each day go out and try to shoot a better score and learn that, hey, I'm not going to hit a great every day, but boy, I shot my best score. You know, so that's a kind of a revelation. Anybody can stand on the range and bang ball after ball after ball and say, look how far I'm hitting it. But Well, not anybody, maybe. But you know what I'm saying.
Sure. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's the thing people just don't think about. That's so huge. The putting. And one of the things when I asked Adam Long about that, and he said, one thing that I like to do, and it's very basic. I mean, you guys on the tour, you got all kinds of drills. He goes, I would set up like one of those aiming sticks, right, like about, a foot to 2 feet behind the hole. And even if I didn't make it, I wanted to make sure that I got it in between the hole and that aiming stick so that I would make sure that I was getting the ball to the hole and pick up proper speed on putts. He feels like that's one of the things. And when I think about when I'm playing with people who don't play all that often, they'll leave putts short because they don't want to blow it past and then risk a three putt, but then they risk a three putt by leaving, 6 feet on the putt, that they left short. And that's one of the things that I feel like proper speed on putting, which I don't know if it's ever talked about, but when I look at when I have a good round and I don't have a good round, it's I'm getting the ball to the hole and at least giving it a chance. And if I do get it to the hole, I don't blow it past by 6 feet and leave myself a lot of meat on the bone.
No, that's you're exactly right. And I do think that the best putters have wonderful touch, because we're not going to hit every shot 6 and 8 and 12 feet from the hole. You're going to have 30 and 40 and 50 footers. And if you can save a stroke by rolling it up there with a tap in or even a 2 or 3 footer, it just relieves a lot of pressure that you might feel and, save yourself. If you hit a poor iron shot 50 feet from the hole and you two putt, you don't even think about it. If you hit a poor iron and you three putt, now you're blaming the putting and the iron. You're right. The best putters seem to have just wonderful, impeccable touch. Witness Tiger's putt from the ninth green.
I was just about to ask you about that putt. I thought that putt, if it goes in, it's like, Johnny, that's better than most. It lives on forever. It just came up like two rolls short.
As I saw where he was, I thought, wow, he's going to have to make an 8 or 10 footer here for his second putt. That was incredible.
And I would say that
if you put 100 spectators right there, 65 of them would putt it off the green or into the bunker, or not one of them would make it, I don't think, or roll it as close as he did. So Sunday at the Masters with all that pressure to roll that down there like that, that's pretty magical.
Yeah, that was actually the signature shot, and I think most people probably have forgotten about it by right now, but that was absolutely incredible. Final question for you. Do you get back to the St. Louis area often?
Usually once a year, not any time special, but it just seems like that's what I average. And my sister and brother-in-law live in St. Louis. My mom still lives in the Belleville area. She's 93. And, Bob's 90. They're still doing terrific. Mine's sharp as they can be. So, but I don't get back as much as I'd like to. It seems like in the summer months, I'm playing a lot. And, if anybody that's traveled most of their life, is probably the last thing they want to do is get on a plane and go somewhere else when they not doing their job. But
I didn't know if you would come back for the PGA Championship last year. I know you had some near misses at Bellevue.
I did, actually.
Oh, you did?
I came back and I watched Bill practice for 2.5 days and was out at the course. Thought it was a wonderful setup there. Bellevue, it's funny, with all those people on the course there, I always thought Bellevue was this massive expanse of acreage and just huge. And with all those people, it was like, oh my gosh, this place isn't big enough for these people. But it's a tribute to the crowds and the people of St. Louis, how passionate they are about golf and how they turn out for an event like that. It's been, it's pretty darn good. And the PGA in the past, when Nick Price won, I played in the senior U.S. Open, the senior PGA we've had there. Wonderful crowds for us. So hats off to the people of St. Louis for supporting golf over the years.
That one still gets talked about. I had a gentleman, like I said, I lived down in Florida for a few months during spring training, and this guy was playing at Medalist, and I guess that's where Koepka will play a decent amount when he's not out on the road. And he was hitting balls next to him on the range at Medalist, and Koepka saw his bag tag, and it was a club in St. Louis. And Koepka goes, St. Louis, huh? And this guy is just, a guy who was happy to be at Medalist that day. And he goes, St. Louis, huh? He goes, best golf tournament ever. And the players, ranging from Tiger to Koepka and a number of other guys just talked about how great the crowds were, you know, and you've been in front of them all. I mean, take your pick of any major. And for whatever reason, the players really, really enjoyed it. And it's not like it was the great, you know, it wasn't like it was 75 degrees with 40% humidity. I mean, those were some wicked conditions. And for whatever reason, the players really loved that stretch of days and appreciated it.
Right. Well, I think, and too, you think about how much the Cardinal fans appreciate the team there. Yep. And you very rarely hear boos, and they're not cynical. They really root for the team. And I think that maybe spilled over for the golf tournaments is they, and golf's the kind of game that you kind of root for everybody. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't wish so much bad on the other guys. You just want your guy to do well. Whereas it's the home team, away team, all that stuff in baseball. But they're always so appreciative of the Cardinals and even the visiting team when they do something well. And I think that kind of showed itself with golf, too. But you're right. I think the guys loved it. I think they'll come back there for sure in the future. I don't know if anything's on the list now, but they've done a great job over the years of putting on some quality events.
Jay, I have really enjoyed this conversation so much that we spent time discussing. I hope I didn't take too much of your time, but I really enjoyed getting your perspective on not only what happened recently at Augusta, but also your career and everything in the world of golf. And I'm sure our listeners enjoyed it well. So I sincerely appreciate it and thank you for your time.
Well, I thank you for having me on and enjoyed the conversation. Great questions, and go Cardinals.
All right. Everybody can agree with that, man. Thank you so much, Jay. Continued success out there.
All right. Talk soon.
Thank you. So there it is, our conversation with Belleville native Jay Haas here on the Tim McKernan Show. Really enjoyed talking with him, getting his perspective on Tiger and also his progression as a golfer. I always find that part of when we've talked with Jay Williamson, we've talked with Adam Long, and now Jay Haas, and getting that perspective, it's so helpful to have. And we thank all of our sponsors for making it possible. Ryan Kelly, thehomeloanexpert.com. Also, of course, Mark Hanna, our presenting guest at Evergreen Wealth Strategies, James Carlton of the Carlton State Farm Insurance Agency, and also Design Air Heating and Cooling, online at designairservice.com. It's hard to stop a train. They're the number one train dealer in the Midwest. And Johnny Landoff Chevrolet, Chevy, find new roads, Highway 270 in the Washington Elizabeth exit, Johnny Landoff Chevrolet, all making this podcast possible. Thank you to Jay Haas. Thank you to our producers, Iggy and Gangster Pete. And thank you to listening for another edition of the Tim McKernan Show here on the Inside STL Podcast Network from the HomeLoanExpert.com studios.